Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. Can you turn me up a little bit? All right, bet.
Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
We making them chips?
Yeah.
Or should I say Fritos?
Yeah.
With the most laid back Jackson of all?
Yeah.
Tyrannio Adaro?
Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
My name is Sugar.
Yeah.
This sure is neato.
Yeah.
To be right here.
Yeah.
On iHeartRadio.
Suprema, Suprema roll call.
Nice.
Suprema, Suprema roll call.
It's La E.M.
Yeah.
Your favorite black one.
Yeah.
With my man Tito.
Yeah.
The finest Jackson.
Roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
Boss Bill's my name.
Yeah.
Northern Indiana boy.
Yeah.
In the Jackson family.
Yeah.
Brought me a whole lot of joy.
Roll call. Yeah. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
My name is Terry Allen.
Yeah.
My last name is Jackson.
Yeah.
I come with the action.
Yeah.
That's a matter of faction.
Roll call. Oh, yeah. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
Wow.
Yeah. I just recorded a song with a Jackson.
Nigga, you made it.
Well, wait, this is our second recording with the Jackson.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
and Randy.
We're experienced now. We're honorary Jacksons. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Questlove Supreme. How you doing? And now we got Sugar Steve.
Hello.
How's it going, Steve?
It's going good, man.
I've never seen all 38 of your teeth.
38. That sounds like not enough.
He doesn't.
Well, I think, you know, just enough. Laia, how's life?
Stupendous, and I'm in this.
All right. And Boss Bill.
What's up?
Wow, even Boss Bill's happy.
Right?
Yeah. We got jobs.
You know, I usually start every Questlove Supreme episode with a barrage of hyperbole and praise that usually takes about 7 minutes. But if you don't know who our guest is today, ladies and gentlemen, and you listen to Questlove Supreme,
you've been under a rock.
Yeah, something's
shame.
Wrong here. Literally, I will say a member of probably one of the most loved and respected musical dynasties, celebrating their 50th anniversary in show business, which is wow. I remember that Soul Train episode where it was like their 10th anniversary in show business. Now it's 50. That's incredible, man. That's a legacy for your ass. Ladies and gentlemen, what else can I say but welcome Tito Jackson.
Yes.
To Questlove Supreme. Yes.
Benjamin Button Jackson.
Yeah, and I was about to say, regressing, and you when I walked in the room...
You thought it was my nephew.
Yeah.
That's a compliment.
You're taking care of yourself, man. Well, I always knew that you and your brother Jackie had proper government names that weren't your stage names. So how did you, was Tito your middle name or your, how did you get your moniker Tito?
Papa Joe named me after a boxer named Tito something. I don't know.
So Tito's on your birth certificate?
No, it's not.
Oh,
no,
never mind. No. Okay.
My birth certificate name is Terriano.
Okay. Terriano Adaro.
Adaro Jackson.
Okay. Wait, those are so many names. Terriano Adaro Jackson?
That's right.
Wow. Adaro.
Adaro.
Yes.
Just not,
that's only
okay.
Three he's... names, the first, the middle, and the last, like everybody else. Margaret.
Terriano's Adaro.
Okay.
Okay. Terriano.
Yeah. Terriano. Oh, I'm sorry.
So
Tito.
At what point were you
I get
Tito?
It now, Miss...
Ever since I can remember. You
all
know?
Right. So all your life, your siblings.
I've been
and your...
Tito. Most people know me by Tito. And what surprised me, we have a corporation with the brothers, and my brother handed me a credit card, American Express. Instead of having my real name, Terriano, it had Tito Jackson. I said, Jackie, I can't use this.
Right.
I don't have one piece of ID that says Tito Jackson.
Oh, see, I understand this because nobody in my family has ever called me by my birth name.
Like, right.
I've always been either Junior or Junebug. Like,
really?
Yeah. Nobody.
Only we call you Bill?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Only my friends and people I work with call me by my real name. Everybody else. See, now that I've put this on the internet, y'all are going to mess that up. Damn.
Yes, Junebug. I cannot wait to call you Junebug. Matter of fact,
you're
no longer Barfield.
Oh, no.
You are Junebug. So, okay, so Tito was your nickname. So, always, unless it's time to take out the garbage, then were you like,
Yeah. Didn't pay attention.
Then that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I see.
Tito ain't had no chores?
I had plenty of chores.
Yeah, okay. I was about to say.
All right. Yeah, I know you
I
did.
I had plenty of chores.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
So I know you're probably tired of recapitulating the story over and over and over again. Okay, is there a question about Gary, Indiana that you've not been asked that we don't know about?
Well, maybe. I don't know. Depends on what you want to ask.
Okay. Well, what I'm really curious about... I'm more curious about the creative process of how things come together. And I know that, and without the, whatever, under the watchful eye of, or the iron hand of Drill Sergeant Joe, whatever, but I know that to get to that level of perfection, you have to put hours and hours and hours and hours of practice in.
Exactly.
So could you give me what a typical itinerary was pre-Motown of you guys prepping for your talent shows?
Of course I can. Well, it was more like go to school, come home, put them books over in the corner. The mics are already set up, all five microphones, amps are on standby, and we're doing it, and kids are still walking home from school, and they're stopping by, hearing the music, pushing each other out the way, trying to take a look or whatever. And we rehearsed maybe 3 or 4 hours prior to doing the show that night. We usually go to Chicago, play the Peppermint Lounge or the Hot Chaparral, something like that. Then get home like 2 in the morning, you know, and go to school next day, wake up at 6, 7 in the morning, go to school.
Were you allowed any downtime from when school let out to home? Or was it, like for me, the fear was you better be home before the Oprah theme comes on. I had to be home at 3. At 3, yeah, that bell, like when Carlton starts dancing, my reaction is when I hear that whistle, I had to be home at 3:59.
Well, my father's thing was when we weren't doing music, he said, don't let the street lights catch you.
Yes.
If those street lights are on and you're not in the house, you're in trouble.
Yikes. Okay.
So wait, can I ask a question? How often did you guys do the showcase or the talent show thing? Because you still had to do homework.
Well, we rehearsed every day. And we do our homework between breaks. Oh, yeah.
So what kind of students were you guys?
We were great students. Okay. Great students. Yeah. We also traveled with a tutor after we had made it professionally. And they have rules, of course, state laws. The kid has to work so many hours. Now he has to have so many hours of a break. So we had a teacher by the name of Rose Fine, and she taught. She was so cool because she would let me smoke my cigarette right in class.
I'm sorry, sir. How old were you smoking your cigarette in class?
I was smoking as a teen. You know, absolutely.
Were you the rebellious Jackson?
Some people say that, but I don't think
so. Like, who's the first to really test the waters to, like, I'm going to break curfew?
You're not going to hit me with that belt?
So was the myth true of the whole guitar thing? Because the thing the way that was presented in the biopic, you know, you were doing chords and stuff already.
Uh-huh.
So how long did it take you to, from the first time you eyed that guitar, to learn chords and all those things before the string broke?
Oh, it took a little while. It took at least 3 to 4 months, you know. I was just playing with it. And I used to go, and my Uncle Luther and my father would play a lot of blues, Jimmy Reed, B.B. King, all these guys from old school. Right. And I just sit there and just stare, you know. He knew I was interested. And I just stare and stare. And when he would go to work, he'd go to myself and Jermaine and Jackie, he would go, I'm going to work. Don't none of you boys touch my guitar. I'm putting it here in the closet. You know, and me being a kid, you don't say that. you know, it made me want to touch it even more.
Right.
So I would take the guitar, play it for hours. My mom would let me play it all day long. And she said, honey, your father's going to be home soon. Put it away. You know, so she was protecting me until I broke that string. Didn't know what
she
to
didn't
do.
Know you, right? How long did the Falcons last? Your father's.
I have no idea of that because I was so young at that time, you know, but they were around a little while. I was basically just a kid trying to play some music with my uncle and my father. Okay. And they would play blues all day, and they had me doing dun, 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 dun. They get all the lead parts, and they give me maybe a minute at the end of the jam section. Okay, you can play now. You know, and I played whatever I could, you know, mistakes and all, whatever, you know, and that was it.
So by the time you guys were formed, then the Falcons weren't necessarily doing their thing?
No, they weren't at that time.
Okay, I see. I just recently not discovered, I didn't realize there was a whole mess. I knew the Steel Town recordings was a 45, but I didn't realize that there were a collection of other songs from that era. But I mean, of course, you know, someone's going to come up like start cashing in. So half of it was just rehearsals, whatever. But at the time when you guys got your thing together with Steel Town, was that like an excitement thing? Like, this is jackpot. It can't get no better than this.
Oh, yeah. We thought we had made big time. You know, Steel Town was a local label out of Gary, Indiana, and their reach wasn't very far. I think we thought we made some noise in Texas, and we made some noise in Gary, and I can't think of anywhere else in America that it was hitting. So that was pretty much the success of that first record, I'm a Big Boy Now.
Okay. And knowing that you guys played the, I guess you could say, the Chitlin circuit of the day, what were some of the venues that you, the major venues?
We used to do the Regal Theater in Chicago. And
was that equivalent to the Apollo?
Yeah,
Chicago. As far as the pressure?
Yeah, well, Chicago's version of the Apollo. Okay. You know, Regal Theater, we've seen and opened up for Jackie Wilson, Gladys Knight, Bobby Taylor, and the Vancouvers. Okay. We were basically a local band that the pros used to come through Chicago, and we were the opening act. Okay. And every once in a while, we'd go to the Uptown in Philly, and we'd go to the Apollo Theater here in New York. And that was pretty much the big dates for us.
So I would assume that your dad would do all the driving?
We had this other man by the name of Jack Richardson, who was a friend of my father. He would do a lot of the driving because my father would work sometime, and Jack Richardson would take us to the performances as my father went to work.
I'm just trying to imagine how all the equipment, and there's no such thing as backline and all that stuff. Man. So,
yeah, we had a Volkswagen bus. So we would load everything in the bus. And back then, you travel with your own PA system as well as your amps and everything.
That's what I'm saying. Like, how did you guys squeeze?
We slept on the amps. Oh, wow. We slept sat on the amps. We took all the seats out the car.
Oh wow. Okay. I was trying to figure out the configuration of how did you get the amps and the seats in there.
I wish you guys could see the look on Laia's face.
Well,
right now.
We do that all the time. I mean, there's a 15-passenger van.
No. They're driving way further than you guys do in this uncomfortable situation.
No, in the beginning, we didn't get our first tour bus till like our second album. So
listen to this, Tito. He comparing 1960s to
No, I'm just saying I never thought about taking out the seats. Yeah. Okay, it makes sense. You can sit on the amps. Yeah. Hella uncomfortable, but
and it's pre-seatbelts too, right?
Kind of middle passage. Jurist, but
yes,
you know,
pre-seatbelts, exactly.
Do you remember, since you were a teenager at this time, right? Y'all are touring, you're a teenager.
Yes, I was a young teenager, maybe 12, 13 years old.
Do you remember what it was like going to these different cities in this time of?
It was exciting. You know, I remember.
You're talking about civil rights era?
I'm talking about civil rights era too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember all that. They used to put us in the back of the hotel near the dumpsters. You know, we were little kids making a lot of noise, and they wanted us away from the front desk.
Really?
So,
Oh, no running in the hallways and those things.
Exactly. And we did it all.
So, can you finally put the official stamp on who brought you to Motown? I understand
Yes, I can. It was two people. I say is responsible for bringing us to Motown, okay. And that would be Gladys Knight.
Okay, because she tells me the story every time. I'm like, all right, you're one of like 12 people now.
No, Gladys Knight. Okay. Gladys Knight, big instrumental. And Bobby Taylor of the Vancouver's.
Okay.
And with Dinah Ross, the story with Dinah Ross, we were just basically, she presented us to the world.
Yeah, marketing.
Yes, exactly.
She had just gone solo at that. She was getting ready to do her first solo record at the time too, right? So that would have been like,
she had did it or what, or getting ready, but they used Dinah Ross presents the Jackson 5.
Yeah, Barry was thinking of marketing.
Two for one.
And mind you, Tommy Chung was in.
Oh, yeah. Tommy Chung was the guitar player then.
Yeah.
Bobby Taylor and the Vancouver's.
Taylor, the Vancouver's. Mm-hmm. So how long was it till after that audition at Motown? Or at least the one that we saw that where it was like official?
Not long. They got us in the studio pretty much right away. You know, we were in the studio within a month. And but the thing about it, when we had did that audition, we didn't think we would be signed because Barry was in the corner, very stern. He didn't show no expression, and we were like doing our thing and say, do he like us and this and that? And we had heard he don't want more children on his label. He having a hard time with Stevie Wonder, with the social workers. He can't record. You already had him in the studio for 4 hours. I got to take him home. He got work. He got school tomorrow. Right. Say, what am I going to do with 5 kids? I can't handle one. And I guess it was Gladys and Bobby that convinced him that you have to hear these children.
Because I always wanted to, I think on that tape, Michael asked, how is that? Or something like, sir, and I never knew what the answer was. Like,
yeah.
You know, yeah. What were you saying, Bill?
Speaking of 5 kids from the Chicagoland area, go back to pre Motown a little bit. Were the 5 Stair Steps? Were you guys like in competition with them constantly?
We were friends. You know, okay. 5 Stair Steps is a great group. They're a young group, like the Jacksons were back then, and they had a song out by the name of Ooh Chow. Mm-hmm. It was made a lot of noise at that time, and they used to travel. We would travel right behind them or with them or what have you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say between the Silvers of Tennessee. Especially because they got such an early start.
Leon told us they're from Indiana, too. Well, he was born in Indiana, in South Bend, where I'm from.
That I forgot about.
Leon Silvers?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I totally forgot about that. So, I mean...
I'll never forget that, man.
Of course.
Everybody born in Indiana, I remember.
So, was it... When it's time to do these shows... and I forgot. Even the Emotion said that they were running to you guys often...
Oh, yeah, the Emotions. And we used to run into Emotions, and back in the day, it wasn't Earth, Wind, and Fire. They were called T-Box Simmons. It was a band.
He didn't tell us that.
Yeah, they were in a band called T-Box Simmons, and they would play the same place, the Hot Chaparral. And, we came up with those guys as well in the Emotions.
So you're saying that a month after that audition, you guys got the news that you got accepted to Motown?
Oh, yeah. We got that. Matter of fact, we got that pretty much at the audition because he walked over to us after we had finished our audition, and we didn't know what he was going to say. He walked over and said, I'm going to take your first 3 records, number one.
Oh, okay.
We said, what? That was unheard of, especially by black artists. You know, 3 records, number one in the country.
Right.
You know, all the charts. He did 4 times.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he did it 4 times.
When do you officially consider like your last day or period in Gary, Indiana? As in rearview mirror, never turning back. We're moving to.
Well, we moved to California back in 1969.
Okay.
And it was funny because our neighbor. This young lady by the name of Brenda White, she used to always say, you Jacksons, all of you guys in that little house making all that noise, y'all ain't going nowhere. So, you know, our motivation
is her. Yeah, you're talking about in Gary, Indiana.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I was like, wait, who lived in Beverly Hills?
Right.
Named Brenda.
Yeah, Brenda. Used to say,
am I bad for seeing that?
Just keep watching. You'll see. You'll see.
Dang, did y'all ever circle back to her? Please tell me.
I haven't seen her since.
Well, I mean, you guys
know she's seen you a few times. No.
Well, of course. Of course. My observations with you guys is that your family was really the first to reap the benefits of the I Have a Dream speech. I consider you guys really the first beneficiaries of kind of the accumulated, whatever was being fought for the civil rights movement. You guys were the beginning of that dream. And then people see you guys and they want to do great and so on and so on and so forth. So, but I know that being the first, and by being the first, really being like the lone black faces in a lot of white spaces and being first, how fish out of water was your experience moving to Los Angeles? I'm assuming that you guys lived in Beverly Hills first.
We lived in Hollywood first, on the street called Queens Road. Then we moved to Beverly Hills. But it was really exciting. You know, we've never seen a palm tree or anything like that. So just to land in LAX airport, it was like exciting seeing the lights and the palm trees and the weather so tropical and all these things. It was like paradise to us. Nobody wanted to go back to Gary, Indiana at that time. Cold winters, you know, freezing, walking to school in 3 and 4 foot snow, you know, who wants that?
But was there ever a feeling, like, at least with my experiences, where I know, like, I'm the lone shark in a odd situation? And I don't mean, like, an odd situation, like, everything's, like, redneck down south. But I just mean, like, showing up at, you know, black tie dinners and the only black person here, or that sort of thing.
We were always motivated and anxious and ready to do whatever it took and whatever.
But you guys never felt like...
No, we never had those feelings.
Or felt uncomfortable.
No, not really, until they put us in the back by the garbage cans.
Oh, Motown period of touring.
Oh, yeah.
Well, y'all were just loud.
Okay.
We deserved it, right? We deserved it. Get rid of this trash.
So did you think at that point the rigorous rehearsals and schedules would slow down somewhat a little bit?
They didn't. They increased, matter of fact.
But did you think that it would?
I thought we made it, and that means you don't have to do too much of that type of thing, you know. But, of course, you know, Quest, as a musician, that you got to keep it going, baby. You got to rehearse, and Motown rehearsed us very, very, very hard. They went through every little move, every step, everything.
Okay, so in a Motown period, now that you're in L.A., what is your typical itinerary there?
We would go to school.
What school did you guys go to?
We went to private school. At first, I went to public school, a school called Fairfax High in Los Angeles. That only lasted so long until after the Ed Sullivan Show and the hit records, the students chased us away. Right. We moved to Beverly Hills, and I went to another school by the name of Universal High School. And that last, I was in that school 2 months. Then they figured out we can't go to a public school. So
you guys were just that too famous to even do
that? Yeah, we had a few hit records out, and the kids were like, recognizing us, and they would peek in the class and that whole thing, and screaming girls running down the hall and that whole thing.
How did that feel? I mean, did it feel like a goldfish or like,
It was kind of scary because all the dudes wanted to whip your butt.
Because the girls
jealousy and that whole thing, you know. So they figured these guys can't go to school here. We got to put them in a private school.
How close was, for your public school experiences, how close was what we know as L.A. gang culture in those public schools? Like, did you have to worry about that?
Well, I remember my brother was dating this young lady by the name of Kathy Bockham, and Dorsey High School is in Gary as well. Mm-hmm. Not Gary, I'm sorry, Los Angeles. Right. And
you're talking about Jackie?
Jackie, yeah. Okay. And this other guy from Dorsey really dug this girl, and he came over, brought about 4 or 5 guys over to Fairfax, calling themselves gonna whoop our butt, mm-hmm. you know, and they didn't know that
it was
we're from Gary, Indiana. From Gary. You know, we may sing and talk about ABC and girl, I think I love you, but we can whoop some butt when we have to, because we grew up in a hood, you know. And my father had always told us to take care of ourselves, because what he would do, he would invite all the kids in the neighborhood over on Saturdays and have boxing matches.
make us box the kids.
And so that wasn't, I was wondering how real that scene was.
Like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was going to ask you, how much should we consider of that story, the Jackson story that Amir is referring to, the American Dream? How much of that should we consider as truth?
A lot of it is true.
Okay.
You know, my father was rough, but he wasn't as rough as they portrayed it him. They dramatized it.
He's a black family.
He's a black daddy, right? Like, right. You just got to switch. You got a belt, pick
we
one.
We all know that story. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You might not know
I have a black
it.
Daddy. No, I have a Amir is my black daddy.
Oh. Anyway, man. So, yeah, I was going to say, how often was the... That's the thing I never had because of the age gap between me and my siblings.
Well, your last name is Love, so that, you know.
Nah, yeah, I wish.
Not no, on
but I mean, it is now.
I never had that, like, yo, I'm going to get my brother to mess you. You know, like, that's the one thing. You
my
never mess.
Gonna beat you up.
You would never mess with, you would never mess with the youngest person on any block because they could always say,
yeah,
I'm going to get my cousin and fuck you. Like, that sort of thing.
But that put pressure on Tito because he's one of the oldest.
Yeah, I was about to say. And so, we always thought you were the oldest anyway.
No, I'm not.
You're third in line.
Yeah, I'm like 2.5 years younger than Jackie. But Jermaine used to always start fights in elementary school in Gary and.
He would start it.
He would start it, then leave me there to fight his battle.
Oh.
Then run home and say, Mother, Tito fighting. Tito fighting. Yeah, he did that quite a few times.
So socially, how do you guys pair off as far as peers? Like, who is your...
Your bestie?
I know that all of you are close. Yada, yada, yada. Whatever.
Your role,
but like...
Who's your road dog?
Who are the road dog groups in the Jackson family?
Well, Jermaine and I hung out together. Marlon and Michael, of course, hung together, and Jackie just mingled in with all of us. He was like big brother, telling us what to do. It's time to rehearse. No, you can't do that. We got to rehearse. You know.
So he's the alpha.
Yeah. He was
father figure.
Yeah, he was older than everyone.
The responsible one.
Yes.
Okay, I see.
Who was the snitch in the family? The tattletale.
Jermaine.
Oh, okay.
Jermaine tell everything.
Middle brother.
He tells so much he tell on himself. He don't even.
That's usually how it works out with the tattletale in the family.
Actually,
too.
You know what? You're right about that. You're right about that. There's Harry from Motown once played me a tape of there's an EPK, well not an EPK, but kind of an audio EPK of. It's like, you know, rapping with the Jackson 5, whatever, where you guys are just talking for a half hour about your hobbies and all that stuff. But Jermaine, all of his portions were about, like, kind of provoking the brothers. Like, Michael, remember that time when you got in trouble for da-da-da-da-da? And Tito, remember that time you got in trouble? I was like, yo, like, why is he snitching? What the hell? I'm also very curious about you and your brother Jermaine's craft as guitarists and bass players. Now, I know that Motown had a strict system, which, of course, you long to get away from once you went to Epic. But I will say that based on the evidence of a lot of live tapes that I've heard of the concerts, and especially with going to Indiana, the special.
Going back to Indiana.
You two were at the top of your game as far as, like, covering, like, really in fine form what the Funk Brothers were doing on record and all those things.
Yeah, because back in the Jackson 5 early days of doing concert tours, our band consists of myself and Jermaine and Ronnie Ransifer on organ and Johnny Jackson on drums.
Right.
And that was the band.
So how often were you, who was the MD of that particular, of just band rehearsals?
Actually, I was. Okay. You know, I was pretty much.
How were the early shows crafted? Not the adult period of the Jacksons, but like the early shows.
You talking prior to Motown?
Not prior to Motown. Like, once you guys were doing Motown. Because one thing that I think that our audience doesn't understand, like, when you're on your first two records, sometimes you have to do cover songs.
We did covers.
And
yes, we
the songs of the day. So
we did covers, and we did a lot of the album songs we had, but a lot of those songs were covers as well. So basically, that's what we did. We covered Temptations, or whether it was Four Tops or whoever. Yeah, we did a lot of covers then.
Who were you? Well, I'm curious about your record collection. Like, by the time that you moved to LA, I'm certain that you sort of accumulated.
Isley Brothers and the Miracles, of course, all the Motown Temps and all that kind of stuff. OJs, we followed.
Who's
those.
Your go-to? Like your favorite? Who were your Jacksons? Like who was your favorite?
The Jackson's
group,
go-to group was the Temptations.
Really?
As far as a group, yes, Temptations. We loved and Sly.
Okay. So were you guys at all thrown off? Being as though you were able to see in real time, were you kind of thrown off by the Norman Whitfield period of that group? Like to go from what they were, the smooth presentation of what I assume that is the blueprint of what you guys were, to suddenly they're hippie, let's keep up with Sly Stone period.
Yeah, I think we were
17-minute intros and...
Yeah, we were basically just trying to follow style. You know, the Sly and the Family Stone is very musical. You know, they're a little different type of setup than a Temptations type of group. They're more musical, so and we enjoyed that, you know, like songs like Thank You and all this stuff, you know. Sly was the man, you know. We loved Billy Preston as well.
Right. Were you able to go to a concert? Like, how often would you see other shows that weren't your own, like
not
any time
often.
Off or
not that often
unless you were on the show
we, yeah
with them.
We, or we have run across them somewhere somehow. Yeah,
was there any act that, not even feeling like they might be a threat, but like that's the level we need to get to, like who?
Stair Steps. Five Stair Steps was one of those groups that we used to look at and say that's what we have to be like. You know, or that was that rival, you know, how you have a rival group or whatever. Oh, yeah.
What was it? Because I've only seen like maybe one or two performances of theirs. Uh-huh. Like, what was it about their presentation then?
Well, I think we loved the way they dressed, the way they carried themselves. And they were professionals, you know. We were trying to get to that stage in our game, you know. So they had it already. They would come over to the Apollo Theater and just tear it up.
Really?
The young ladies would scream and holler and chase them off stage, and that's what we want.
How frightening was the Apollo experience? Even though, I mean, I'm talking about past amateur hour. Once you guys were even established, like, was there still fear of, like, we still better rock it or else?
Yeah. We never really concentrated on, like, trying to go past what we thought we could have been. We just did what we can do, did our best at what we could do, and that usually turned out to be pretty cool. Okay. So that's where that was.
I know that in the vaults of Motown, there are hundreds, like Tupac level, Prince level, of volume of finished recorded songs that are fully mixed and everything, mm-hmm. And not, you know, the final 9 or 10 songs that make a particular Jackson album. Like, I think at last count I saw at least somewhere like 200 plus songs. So what is the process of how songs were divided, or like how did you guys make decisions?
Well, we didn't make those type of decisions, you know.
They just told you.
We would come home from school right in the studio every day. If we didn't have a concert or on the road, we would go straight to the studio and do our homework in the studio, get home about 10 o'clock at night. And that was it. We used to do a song a day, you know, background and lead vocals. And if we had any cleanup, we would do it on the weekends.
So, I mean, whose decision was it to, like, was it everything like, okay, so here's some 10 songs and what do you guys dig? And
well, I think Motown pretty much picked the songs that we recorded.
Okay.
And with Hal Davis and the Corporation, Freddie Parent and all those guys, you know, they already had it laid out for us. They had done the keys and all those type of things, and they cut the tracks and have us to come in later and do the vocals on them.
So the various producers, James Carmichael, Hal David, mm-hmm. The Mizell brothers for a second?
Yeah, Deke Richards, Franz Mizell.
Who did you who did you or the brothers particularly favor as a producer?
Well, we loved working with Hal Davis because he was funny. He was, you know, we would joke a lot in the studio, and he was so serious about it. And we're little kids just playing on the mic and not serious. And he would push record, waiting to hear. We just start laughing, and he would get upset. Come on, guys, come on. You know, he was really, really a lot of fun. But we also enjoyed the corporation, which was Deke Richards, Fun Mizell, and Freddie Parent and Berry Gordy. They called themselves the corporation, and they were a lot of fun. They were a lot of fun as well. They were young men just finishing college with their musical scholarships, and they were great writers.
So how long were you guys given a particular song to learn and absorb?
We learned it on the spot. Learned it in the studio. Yeah.
Okay, so like... all right, so Home Alone and Dance, which sounds like 12 minutes, and all of you have designated parts. Mm-hmm. So would they take you one by one, or is it just...
Well, certain parts were taken one by one. Certain parts were taken as a group. And like I say, we learned that song right on the spot. You know, we'd go in the studio and in the control room, sit with the producer, and he'll go through it, this line, that, this is your line, Jermaine, this is your line, Michael, this is your line, brothers, this, you know, and that whole thing, so.
Wait, can you answer a question for me?
Sure.
I always wanted to know this. Okay, be honest. When you guys were recording Rhythm Child, was there a feeling in the air like, okay, this is going to be bigger than Dance Machine? Because basically it's the same narrative and the same DNA as Dancing Machine. So in my mind, I felt like, oh, you guys really felt like She's a Rhythm Child is going to be like the new Dancing Machine in 1974.
Well, Dancing Machine is on its own. You know, that song is so magical. I love the song, and I didn't think that. So I was just doing what they told us to do.
Okay.
I've always wanted to know who brought in I'll Bet You for the ABC album.
Baby, I bet you. I can't remember that. I think that may have been, I can't remember. I'm sorry.
Well, I think Barry was hands-on at least for the ABC record as far as navigating it.
Right? Yeah, Barry would let the producers work with us, and they would send a copy of the track or whatever we had did that day to him. He would study it and give them pointer notes, and they
try. Did you guys know George Clinton at all, or was it just a random funkadelic song for you guys to?
No, we didn't know.
George Clinton wrote "I'll Bet You." Actually, it's a funkadelic song too.
Thank you. You knew what I was thinking.
Did you? All right, so you. I mean, you were prominent. Contrary to opinion, all the brothers had parts on records, including Marlon. I didn't realize until maybe 10 years ago that's him riffing on Mama Got a Brand New Thing, Don't Say No. Mm-hmm. In my mind, I always thought it was Jermaine riffing. Mm-hmm. And then I realized it once I listened closer. But was it your desire, being as though you're the only, well, minus Marlon, you were the only one that didn't do any solo projects?
Yeah, I'm the... Well, you know, they give me those parts that nobody wanted. You know, the low part. You know,
right.
I've always had the low voice in the family. And so, like I said...
you said nobody wanted, like it's Chitlins. Like.
Yeah, well, you know... you know, Temptations was our idolized group that we idolized.
Yeah, you were Melvin Franklin.
And exactly. Right. So they looked at me like Melvin Franklin, and that's where you stay now, you low voice. You know, so I never got that opportunity to sing.
Like you know? Right now.
But I didn't only sing low parts. I would also double on other notes in the background. Then they'd put me in and do a little bass bottom part or whatever. Okay. And sometimes I'll just make up a part just so I can be on the record too.
Okay.
So you did get to do that, because I was sitting here wondering, like, when did you guys get to touch the records? Because you said for the longest time, y'all just go in, you know your parts. Uh-huh. At what point were you able to have a voice and say, what if we did this?
How were you feeling watching your label mates, Marvin Gaye and Stevie Wonder especially, go through such a creative kind of
blossoming?
evolution.
Yeah, blossoming yeah. that you guys weren't able right. to have. Like, how did you feel in observing, like, when you're getting your copy of Inner Visions and fulfilling this first finale, it's like, this is what we want to do.
Well, you know, we always idolized people like Stevie, you know, and wanted to do stuff like him. And we actually asked to be produced by him.
Well, you did Buttercup.
Yeah, exactly. We did Buttercup.
And You're Supposed to Keep Your Love from Me. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that was... There's an original... it's on Let's Get Serious.
I didn't know Buttercup was released.
Yeah, about 10 years ago now.
Yeah, finally. Once.
Which I have a follow-up question in regards to.
All right, go ahead.
When Motown was putting that out, I actually got invited over to their offices to hear a lot of the tracks that they were going through. Mm-hmm. And one of the tracks that they played us was, I think the title was something like Tito's Theme. It was introduced to us as it was going to be a Tito solo track.
I seen that reel, but I never heard it.
Yeah, actually, I got to hear it.
Okay,
I got to hear it. I can't remember what it sounds like, but I do remember hearing it. So, what do you remember about that?
I don't remember anything.
Tito's Thing?
Yeah,
I don't remember.
It don't even sound
familiar.
Maybe it
was intended for him.
Maybe that was the last song that I recorded before we left.
So
can you gonna go make my question make sense now?
I'm getting to the bridge. Now, my personal favorite period of the Jacksons is probably the period that all of you kind of like shrug at, which is 74 Vegas variety show period, mm-hmm. pre-Destiny. So let's just say like Vegas to Going Places.
Mm-hmm.
What were you personally feeling at that time as far as where the brothers were concerned? I mean, your brother Michael expressed that he felt like we were old hat and he didn't enjoy doing the variety show and all those things.
Well, you know, I'm pretty sure you heard it too, because when you're in the business, you have what we call haters. Mm-hmm. And people used after, I think we had our first four number ones, and then we started having songs that didn't make it to number one. And people used to come up and say, "You guys are finished. You know, you're not going
to
have
you guys?"
Oh, yeah. And that gave us motivation, of course.
Right.
And we've always wanted to write music and produce some of our own stuff. And that was our reason for moving on to Columbia Records at that time, Epic, mm-hmm. because they gave us that opportunity to have a song or two on our albums. Right. You know, like the Jacksons that was... produced by Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff,
yep.
you know, and they worked with us with the songs we had, you know, they inputted their involvement and made it happen. So that was a very exciting moment for the brothers to know that they were capable of writing songs that people would love and like and buy.
So you yourself, you didn't enjoy doing the variety show? Or
it didn't bother me at all. You know, I do. I was one of the members that whatever it is, I'm going to be there. Whether we're playing in a closet or playing in the arena, I'm going to be there. So
is that because you just loved it so much?
Well, I just wanted to be a team player.
Okay.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, like, I think it would be like today if someone got a reality show. Mm. Then it's like, all right, we got to get a reality show. So I'm certain for you guys, it was like, wait, the Osmonds have a variety show, and Shields and Yarnell has a variety show, and there was a point where Glass Knight and the Pips had a variety show. So
Brady Bunch had a variety show.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. No, I know you're trying to be funny, but...
No, that's what I was
there's
watching.
There's a dope-ass drum break on Mr. Drummer Man. The Brady
Bunch. So, speaking of the variety, or not the variety show, but the Vegas, what was it like, you know, the Vegas residency started like 2 months after you guys got back from Senegal. So what was it like, you know, the difference?
Where you guys get your history from?
That's well, true. That's
we are
true.
Nerds.
I mean,
we're
you guys
nerds.
Know,
you
guys know
Senegal.
More about me than
we were following you around the whole
everything.
Time.
I done forgot everything. You know, it's been a long road, but
was that the first time you guys been to Africa? Or
yes, it was. We went to Senegal.
Okay,
I hear yes. all about yeah. it.
What was it like?
It was very exciting getting off the plane, and that's where Michael got that "Mama Say, Mama Saba, Mama Mock" from.
Okay.
And that's what they were chanting to us when we first went to Africa. They were singing, playing the drums. Mama say, mama sa, mama kusa. Mama say, mama sa, mama kusa.
Wow.
You know.
What's it mean, Tito?
I don't know.
Okay.
Mama said, take out that garbage.
That's funny.
Well, also, are there any memories whatsoever about, because there's a infamous photo with you guys hanging with the Marleys in Jamaica.
Uh-huh.
Is there any memories of that period? Did you guys know that Bob Marley was royalty, or was it just like, oh, a weird guy with hair wants to hang with us?
Well, it smells funny.
Right.
It smells funny.
Well, we had did this show in Jamaica with the Wailers, and Bob Marley was there, of course. And the next day, he invited us over to hang out. And we go to Bob Marley's compound, and the guy's hanging out in the trees, smoking the dubs and all this stuff. And it was really exciting. And he took us through the whole compound, showed us where he worked, and wrote this song, where he recorded, and what have you. And I just remember that very, very much. It was a great period. And back then, Bob Marley was popular, but he wasn't as popular.
Mythical figure as he was.
Yeah,
right.
Today, you know, he's everywhere now.
So can I just ask real quick, because you're hanging out with the Marleys, but from what we know, you guys were a very religious family. And, you know, of course, the legend of your father being strict. How did you navigate, or did he ever say any, give you disclaimers before y'all did this or that? Or
he's probably there with them.
But did he just say, you better not do this? You better, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, we knew. We grew
he's
up
a black
knowing.
Daddy.
We knew what
you knew
not
to act
do.
Up.
Yeah.
So do I guess that the Jacksons never got a taste of the Bob Marley ganja?
No, we didn't.
Just ask if they smoke weed.
Well, that was the second question. I want to know if they sipped the Bob Marley, and then y'all just never got a taste of it?
No.
Like, never did, though, no. Live in LA.
Dude, okay. I just started smoking weed, and I'm like 49.
I got babies. A bong on me right now, you guys. It's in my bag.
So wait, before I jump to Epic, by this point, you're the Jackson 5, end quote. And I know that you were the first to get married and have kids or whatnot. So I'm assuming that you were domesticated. But,
take out the trash.
Wow.
No. I just meant, but the thing is that you're the Jackson 5.
Right.
So.
And there's a lot being thrown at you.
What was. How is it hanging in Hollywood? Like, I know you have a massive car, I've seen like photos of you, TK Carter, and everything. Like, antique cars were your thing?
Yes, still is.
Well, first of all, how many? I hate asking black questions. That's the one that I never want to do. Like, so how many mansions do you have? And how many cars do you have?
It's not really a black
but
question.
I feel like you're the original Jay Leno. Like, what was it about antique cars? And because anytime I've seen photos of you, it's like, you're in a garage with an antique car. So, like,
I just always loved mechanics. You know, even when I was a young kid, you know, I built my own bicycle out of the junkyard and then did a go-kart and then got into cars. I love them, especially the older stuff, like in the 20s and that. So it's always been a love of mine. And
how easy was it to get access to that back then? I'm just saying now, like, if I buy a pair of Jordans, like, my business manager's like, hey, man. And I'm kind of cool now, but still it's like, hey, man. But
Jordan.
How many cars were you for Jordans? Just for sneakers. But how many cars did you collect back then?
I had about maybe a dozen, you know. But
where did you store them?
I have a warehouse that I put them in. Right now I have about 20 cars.
Can I have a car, Mr. Tito?
And how many do you let your kids drive? Well, your grown children.
They don't drive any.
They got their own money.
They do, but they don't have those cars.
No, they don't have
They
cars.
Can buy their own.
Yeah.
Nah, he got some rare stuff going on.
I got a few rare ones.
They got some potion checks, I'm sure.
But is it, like, are they cars just to collect and... I mean, there are things I collect that I would never utilize. I got a pair of Jordans I would never wear because they'll explode. But I'm just saying.
What?
Yeah, that's the thing you got to know. Jordans will explode after 30 years.
I get a pleasure.
I found out the hard way. So
I get a pleasure out of buying a car. I'll find a car for $700.
Oh, and then you'll hook it up.
I'll redo it. Take every nut and bolt out of it and have it powder blasted. And
you really are the original Jay Leno.
And this is you yourself. Like, are you one of those people that can put together that car kit that I see men?
I get my
hands. The carburetor.
My hands have probably got grease under the fingernails now from some car I worked at.
Mm. So even to this day, like working on antique cars is your hobby.
Yeah, and I've been building lately. I've been building a lot of the surfer type 60s Volkswagen buses.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love those things. Wow. Yeah, I got about nine.
Oh,
of
but
those.
You can soup one up. That's
you can put the seats in them.
put the seats back in.
Put the seats back in. That's right.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, January 20th is my birthday, so I'm just saying.
He just said he don't give none away.
Yeah. So, never mind. Okay, I'll think of something. Okay, so going to Philadelphia. By the way, my elementary school was next to Philly International on Broad Street. So once in a blue moon in second or third grade, I'd see you guys like going in, going out.
That's got to be freaky as a kid to see the Jacksons going.
Well, I've seen, actually what's weird is that you guys would even visit to say hi even after the fact. Like I think once before a Destiny concert, you guys had stopped by 313 Broad Street. And I only knew because like every human being in my school like was out in the streets chasing you guys. That's how I would know the Jacksons are in proximity. But in kind of the slow process that eventually led to the Destiny album, leaving Philadelphia, first of all, how long were you guys physically in Philadelphia? Were you only there for like studio time or did you like live there?
No, we were only there for studio time and we get called in and we'd do an album in 2 weeks and do everything and move on.
Okay. Know? So
you would sleep there for 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So how long did it take for you guys to convince Ron Wisner and
Freddie,
I guess,
DeMann?
Yeah, Freddie DeMann and Walter Yetnikoff to like, okay, we got to do this on our own. Like, how long did it?
Well, we went to Epic Records saying that we want to write some music and produce some of our songs. And what had happened, we had a couple of songs on the earlier albums, the Coin Place album and the Jacksons album. And they did very well. And they gave us the green light to do our next album, and which was Destiny, and we wrote all the songs. And
so when you guys were doing the process, what was the division of labor for that album? Because now you guys have to answer to yourselves. So is it like, did you have a family meeting? And
well, I think we already had some songs. Maybe Jackie had a song or two. I know I had a couple of songs, and Michael had some stuff where we get together and write the lyrics and help each other out on the song and write about situations, whether it was my mother and her politeness or whatever. And that's pretty much how it came out.
Wait. I caught that. All right. Without getting personal, pan pizza. Okay. I always wanted to know, what did you guys feel about the lyrics of Destiny? Because I personally felt that was kind of Michael's passive-aggressive way of saying, guys, I want to do stuff on my own, and I don't know how to tell you guys. Because to look at the lyrical content, I felt that was his, of all the I want to break free themes that he's ever had in his career, that was the most explicit, direct, but kind of underhanded. I mean, Destiny goes there, Things I Do For You goes there, Push Me Away goes there, even though it's disguised as a love song, but especially that's what you get for being polite. Which, I mean, was there ever a moment where you guys were just chilling one day and was like, listen, hey, wait a minute. Like, was it? But you said that was about your mom's?
Yes. Wow.
Yikes!
And Things I Do For You. Yes. Yes, we had that.
I'm gonna go read those lyrics.
Please reveal. I mean, as much as
I
you can reveal.
That's what
without...
I was doing as y'all was talking.
Okay, since you kind of opened that rabbit hole, and we're black, can I assume that since you, I don't know any successful black person that doesn't go through survivor's guilt. Do you understand what survivor's guilt is? It's as far as if someone's successful, then there's kind of the unspoken, obligatory need to take people with you. And I know that there's friends and family and cousin Ray Ray and the cat you went to school with and let me hold a little something and our phone bill's cutting off, our phone's getting cut off next week and da-da-da-da-da. Like, how are you able to matrix dodge or avoid, yo, let me hold something real quick. Like, yo, man, can you help? Or, like, am I assuming that if these songs are factual in terms of people using and that sort of thing, how are you able to avoid, or how easy are you with saying the word no? You know,
how easy
in 1978, how easy is it to say the word no? Like, again, like, hey, look, we're down on luck, da da da, has school tuition next week, yo, can y'all help out, da 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 da. Like, I know no successful black person that manages to avoid, and you're the Jacksons, which in everyone's mind in America is like family royalty. So how hard is it to avoid hanger-ons or people that ask, take?
That still happens today. You know, that comes with the territory. As you know, you're going to meet people that's hanging with you just to meet another brother.
I don't mean strangers, though.
I'm talking family, about
people that you know.
That's what I'm talking about.
Distant cousins.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know y'all got a large
ass
family.
So they haven't gotten the clue yet? Y'all been doing this for 50 years and the same people still,
y'all still asking? They're still the Jacksons.
No,
no, I'm saying the same people are still asking. That's what I'm saying.
No, you meet new people that still ask. But,
can I have a car?
Shut up, Steve.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to, you know, I try to avoid gotcha journalism or whatever. But I know that it has to be awkward being a powerful family that, you know, you guys have a hard time just managing and navigating your own thing without the eye roll of, man, this is like, so is it that you change your phone numbers a lot?
We did that too.
Or you're just on tour and,
We did that too.
Well, they didn't have cell phones back then, so you're lucky.
But we had a lot of protection from security and those type of things. People look after us, especially the people of Motown. You know, even when we would go on the road or whatever, and if the other Motown people around, they would be like our parents, you know. Mm-hmm. They would give us advice, don't touch drugs, don't do this, do that. So we were schooled by the Motown staff and the artists.
Is it easy to still go to family reunions or your high school or hang with friends? Like, are you still friends with people you were friends with 40 years ago? And that
I'm
sort
friends
of thing?
With friends that I had from Gary, Indiana.
Oh. Still?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
That's a blessing.
Uh-huh. That's a miracle.
Yeah.
That's Tito. Yeah. Is everybody friends with people from Gary? Because I feel like we expect this from Tito for some reason. We don't know you, but we just feel like you still, I don't know. It's just
I got my old buddies around.
Yeah, see, I feel like
but
it's a Tito.
I lost a lot of people in my life. Oh. Bunch of people. I just lost one of my high school friends a couple of weeks ago.
We're getting old.
Sorry to hear that, man. Yeah. Another important element of your development as an entertainer is the live show presentation. The Jacksons live show presentation. So in your mind, with theatrics now entering the realm, Fire with their theatrics and Levitating and Isley Brothers and Smoke Machines and Parliament Funkadelic,
there was
their theatrics.
Yeah.
were you seeing shows then, and was it like, yo, you gotta see blah blah blah? Like, what concerts?
It was a period when, like you said, you know, Earth, Wind & Fire, they always had the great show and some type of magic illusions or whatever, and we felt that's where it's going. We got to do something too similar, you know, to keep it, the concerts exciting, to make people want to come see you. And that's what it was like back then. You know, we're playing arenas holding 20,000 people. You know, how you're going to get all these people in this arena. And you had to have a show that offered more than just the music. It had to be eye candy as well. So
what was that initial pitch like? Like, okay, we're all going to get in this box, and then it's going to be like pitch dark, and then it's going to explode, and then we're going to come out with new outfits. Like,
you have people in the business that have these creative ideas that come up with it, props and things of that nature. Whatever you can imagine, they'll try to make it happen.
But this was new at the time. So, now it's nothing to, you know, for you to say, all right, Kanye West, we're going to levitate you on a stage throughout the stadium. But back then, you guys were definitely, like, I thought my cousins were lying. They're like, yeah, and then they got in a box and exploded. And I thought, oh, you just lying, Marky. Like, I didn't believe it until I saw my own Jackson show. I was like, oh, they really are exploding. So even in the initial days of those tours, like, there wasn't a fear, like, hey, man, like, this is too much, like, with the explosions and all that stuff.
No, it was exciting. You know, the only thing that was detrimental was the commercial we did, the Pepsi commercial.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen that final tape? I finally saw, like, two. So it came online, like, 2 years ago. I didn't really. Have you seen it? Mm-mm.
Do you know what's crazy in 2019 or 2020, whenever they listen to this? It's people out there. It's a whole generation who do not know what you're talking about.
Certainly okay, is. So there was a Pepsi commercial shot in which said explosions that I was speaking of, sparks went into Michael's hair. And then was it you that put your jacket on top of his head?
No, he called out my name. I was on the other side of the stage. He called out my name for help, but I was too far away. I think it was one of the prop men who thought that quickly. And
like 2 or 3 years ago, they finally put the actual
Yikes.
With his hair on fire, and I didn't realize it was that serious. Like it was.
I'm like, did y'all tear up? I mean, it was must five, have freaked
seven,
out as a
seven
like,
seconds,
my little brother.
7 seconds of that, and it would have been a whole new story, yo. Like, what was? Well, of course, obviously, what was the feeling of that? Like.
It hurt us very much. You know, we knew he was hurting, and he was had these serious burns to his scalp and that whole thing. And from that point, I felt that was the beginning of a lot of problems for him.
Right.
Yeah, he stayed in pain a long time.
And just never told us or?
Yeah.
But wow. You guys knew that he was
in pain. Yeah, yeah.
Tito.
Yes.
I'm circling back on That's What You Get. These lyrics. I'm sorry, y'all. I just want to. Mama Catherine, what did she have bigger things? What did she want? I know she had a lot of. She had 9 children, but was there more that she had wanted in her life? Like, what did you think she was kind of. It feels like you're missing out on or getting, you know.
Well, you know, I may have twisted that. That song. Things I Do For You is my mom.
Okay.
That's
okay.
What You Get Polite.
Okay.
That's
Phew.
Johnny Jackson.
Woo, thank God. Okay.
That's Johnny Jackson.
Okay.
The drummer.
The drummer.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Oh, okay. That's better. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Come on, man. Why are you dropping these gems and then being all ambiguous? Now I got to go home and figure this Rubik's Cube out. That's crazy.
Wow.
So with. With the Victory Tour leading up to it and how mammoth it was, what were, I mean, you know, again, one person's heaven could be another person's hell, but to be on the inside of what was then the biggest grand tour of all time, like, what are your memories of the Victory Tour? Was it sort of like, hey, it's fun, or was it like, it's getting to be too much, or?
No, it was never too much, because being a black band, and probably the first black band to do those type of venues, it was a pleasure to represent and do those. We would go into a city like New York or wherever, and we'd do three shows at the stadium and sell them out, and that was never heard of for black bands to do that, you know. Okay. So we felt we were, you know, making a name for ourselves, creating history, making landmark.
I'm about to say, I got to ask about We Can Change the World.
Yes.
Very, okay, speaking of Bob Marley, I always felt that that was your
reggae
kind of world music. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I love reggae.
Right.
Even on my Tito Times album, I have a reggae song that I just adore. Yeah.
So, yeah, I was going to say, was that your inspiration to sort of do like a world music?
Yes, yes, yes.
It's the songs about changing the world.
You got a lot of different styles in you, because I was listening to one song and I was like, you got the country in you.
Yeah, I do country stuff too. You know, we started out singing.
Yeah, I was like, see, Cottonfields.
Yeah, exactly.
When I heard that, I was like, yo, what do they know about that? But yeah.
You know, but my music is blues. I love blues.
Who do you consider, like, God, especially to be around in Chicago those times, were you able to see these legends? Really?
No, no, no.
So you guys never played blues clubs and
we played blues clubs, but
Freddie
we
did, and we, Albert and
no, I never saw Albert King or any of those guys play. I would hear them on record: Albert Collins, Albert King, Jimmy Reed, and B.B. King, or such.
Who's your favorite blues guitarist player, as far as tone and
B.B. King and Albert Collins?
Really
love them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. Okay.
That's an article here from Right On Magazine, October 1971. You also mentioned Jimi Hendrix was one of your favorites.
Yeah, Jimmy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Really? Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts on Ernie Isley? And as far as the direction that the Isleys took?
With... Oh, he's dope. Ernie's dope on the guitar. Yeah. I love his tone.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I know that the fruit doesn't fall far from the tree, and that your sons...
3T.
We'd be, yeah, remiss. Not to mention your sons also... have a you know, successful singing career as well. Were you a little skeptical, and knowing what you know, what the business is, were you skeptical in sort of encouraging them to?
Well, like you said, knowing the show business and the ups and downs of the business, they were very good athletes. They played a lot of baseball. My middle son was ranked number 5 in the state for baseball pitching, and mm-hmm. he was, Barry Bond was very looking at him and wanted him to go to the Giants training camp and train with them. And at the time, he was recording his first album with the brothers, his brothers. And they hung up the gloves and wanted to pursue songs.
Really?
And I used to tell them, I say, hey, you can do them both. You know, when the baseball season ain't happening, get under the microphone. You can do both things.
Was this TJ or Terrell?
Terrell.
Oh, Terrell, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but
Terrell.
TJ was just as brilliant as an athlete as well.
Mm-hmm. Wow, okay. So they wanted to pursue sports a second?
Well, they didn't exercise that. They wanted to be entertainers because of me and their uncles, of course.
How hard is it to keep them grounded and humble when they're family are superheroes? Mm-hmm.
They're pretty easy, you know.
When did they realize, like, oh shit, like, okay, this isn't normal?
That's a good question. Yeah. I don't have the answer for you, but they always loved the business and wanted to be a part of it. You know, like they had gone to a Jackson concert when they was super young, and they looking at the outfits, picking off the rhinestones and excited, and then come home and grab brooms and mops and put on the record. And
be the Jacksons.
Yeah, and I take the record.
Yeah, nah.
Y'all trying to be like us?
Don't touch my guitar. Yeah. Did they have a don't touch my guitar moment?
No, they didn't have
that. Oh, you told your kids to go, whatever.
I told them, if you're going to do this, you're going to do this. We're not faking it and all that. We're really playing the instruments and really singing. I say, if you really want to do it, I'll let you use my instruments. You can go in the studio and mess around, get familiar with things. And they did. Then they showed interest. I got them some lessons. They learned a few things here and there. And I started putting them under the microphone in the studio.
Are there any second generation Jacksons that are just like doctor, lawyer? Just...
Yeah. We have accountants and stuff.
Oh,
Marlon Kitts are accountants and lawyers and stuff like that. He don't want his kids in show business.
That's even more important. Yeah. Like, let's have some behind the camera.
Somebody got to count the money that you can trust.
Yeah.
I see that. Okay. So for your, why did it take you so long to finally like really develop? Well, I don't think it took you that long, because long after the group had left Epic, I've seen you a few times, like you've had your blues review at various clubs. Mm-hmm. I've seen it a few times. So during that period, late 90s, mid 90s, whatever, like what made you decide to like sort of scratch that blues itch that you had?
Well, it's still there. You know, it never goes away. It's part of me, you know, but most of my fans aren't blues. Mm-hmm. So I figured if I'm going
to, so they still come to the show, like, waiting for you to shovel the funk? And
oh, yeah, that whole thing. Absolutely. And I just figured I'd need to do something to satisfy their ears. Mm. You know, so I decided my first album is going to be for them. You know, and I just pretty much finished a blues album that I'm not ready to release, because I'm going to do a Tito Time 2.
Nice.
And maybe third album be blues record. I just did a recording with George Benson, and we redid Rock Me Baby.
Whoa.
George McCrae's.
I'm sorry?
Oh, wait. George. Rock Me Baby All My Night Long, the BB King?
Exactly.
Oh, whew. Okay. Yeah. There's a bunch of Rock Me Babies. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, we have BB's daughter on the record as well. Yes.
Does she play, or is she?
She's a singer. She sounds fabulous, too.
Do you ever just go out and surprise people, just go to like a jam session? I mean, just.
I haven't done that too much in my life. I've done it before, but not too much. No.
We got to get Tito in some jam sessions.
Yeah, we welcome that. Yeah. You know, well, if the Roots.
Do some jam sessions.
Exactly. That's my point. Were you surprised at the reception of Tito Time? And not surprised at the positive response, but, you know, I mean, it's always a risk out there to.
I've always been very quiet, like I said, and never spoke out, never let my, pants down or however you want to put it. And
But pants is good, too, Tito.
Yeah. Oh, it's hair?
It's hair, but I'll take the pants.
Well, I got it. There's hair when I let my pants down, too. But anyhow. I think the fans accepted it very well, so I thank them for that.
How do you guys divide your time now with touring and doing, like, festivals all over the world and downtime?
Well, people don't understand is that people always say to me, you know, this was the last time you seen your brother. I say, well, it's been about 2 weeks, 3 weeks. 2 weeks, 3 weeks? I say, yeah.
Are you tired of people asking, like, when you're alone, like, where's the rat? You know, where's it? Like, you're attached at the hip.
They want you to be.
Exactly.
That's the thing I hate the most.
They still want us to be Canada at? Jackson right. 5, you know?
But that you've been with them all your life, and two, three weeks is great.
And if I see my brothers, you know, I might see them every day for a month on the road, you know? When I'm not on the road, I want to get away and enjoy my life a little bit personally.
Well, I see how the schedule is now, and you guys are, you know, when it's festival time for Europe and all those other countries, I mean, you guys are pretty much together. So I saw you guys when you first started touring, like, was it 2010, 2011? And compared to what it is now, some 8-9 years later, where you guys are like a full-fledged operating machine, how do you how do you guys divide that time? Because I know that could be tiresome.
I'm one of those people.
And pain.
I don't want to see the schedule. You know, I don't want to know what I have to do. I'm just going to do it.
Do it?
Yeah.
And if you see the schedule,
it's easier that way.
See,
it's much easier.
I need to know how you prepare because I told the guys once I was randomly on a Jackson's tour in London about 3 or so years ago. Mm-hmm. And you guys still move your bodies like
yeah,
you did
that shoveling
50 years ago. And they're like, y'all do like 12 songs at least. How do you prepare physically for something like that?
It's called not taking drugs and not drinking and getting your sleep and your rest.
There you go.
Yeah, Tito. Because Marlon still, oh my God. Mm-hmm. Yeah, seriously. Not a stretch, not a warm-up, not a yoga, not a vegan, not a keto, not a nothing. Just
well, Marlon, he don't eat any red meat, but he's healthy. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to just do it. That's all we do. Just do it. Yeah.
Not even a stretch or a warm-up.
Well, Marlon stretches. Of course, they stretch. I don't do anything. I look at him. To my guitar.
And when did you fall in love with the derby?
I've been wearing this thing for 25 years, maybe. Yeah. Back in the day when my kids were rolling around the UK, I went into the hattery and I discovered bowlers.
That's what they're called. Was I wrong in calling it a derby?
No, it's a derby, too.
Okay.
So you were traveling with them in the very early stages of 3T?
Yes.
Were they teenagers then?
Yes, they were.
Okay, so I guess, you had to travel with them.
I think 15, 16, and something like that in that age group.
Okay.
Young teenagers.
I see. So what is your, besides the Tito Tea Time, what you're contemplating, what is your future? What do you?
Well, my future is to continue doing my solo thing and enjoy it. Of course, work with the brothers. I like to do a blues album and do that whole thing. And that's basically all I'm looking for, just doing my music. I'm a musician, a singer, so I want to have complete success in that area.
Well, I think you'll have success in that area. I mean, you're Jackson, for God's sakes. You're Jackson. Any other Van requests, Steve?
What? Van? Oh, no. No.
Okay.
No, he's going to give me the car, I'm sure.
Okay.
I don't need to request it again, do I?
I don't know.
What's the car you've had the longest of your cars?
I have a 1930 Cabriolet, Model A Ford. That I adore. You
That's
know.
Your favorite?
It's not my favorite.
Don't
it's the
ask
one
for
I
that.
Had the longest. I've had that the
Which
longest.
One's your favorite that you have?
I have a 1948 Lincoln convertible that I adore. Ooh,
wow. Can you just make me feel normal? Do you just have a regular like Corolla?
Yeah. Just, a Prism or
like
yeah.
just to go to corner store to get toilet papers.
He go to Gelson's. He only go to Gelson's.
What's a Gelson?
That's the ritzy grocery store. If he goes to the grocery store.
How do you know
store.
About Gelson's?
Because I live in L.A. now, so I just.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. I see you, Tito.
Yeah, okay. Well, I feel you.
Wait, well, what is your car? What's your store car you run around and do errands car?
Or do you have to stunt every time?
I going incognito. I have a few cars I like. You know,
I
drive a Fiat 500.
Wow.
And I drive a 1997 Dodge Ram pickup truck.
Okay.
Diesel.
Yeah.
Oh,
Diesel.
That's a down low under radar car.
Yeah.
I still consider that stunting. Well, I was waiting for you to say, like, I have a Scion or something.
Like he does.
Okay.
That's what Quest keeps, Tito. He keeps Scion and a Kia on deck just in case.
Well, what? My one fan chases me down the street.
They saw the commercial.
No. Before I let you go, can you just tell one random, is there just a random
favorite story.
Jackson story?
There's a few.
That you can tell.
Well, when we were young, back in the day, and everybody know what Jermaine's like.
Or, better yet, just give me your Jermaine story.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
We used to have after the show, you know, the girls were crazy on stage, chase us off stage and come to the hotel. We have 500, 600 girls running through the hotels, trying, get up the stairs, up the elevators, put security on the stairwells and at the elevators and everywhere.
Yeah, like your aunties.
And somehow were... Jermaine got somebody through.
Wow. What?
He told
me. I said our aunties were wild back in the day.
Yes.
Our aunties.
Yes. Huh? Older sisters.
But all anyhow, right. Jermaine and Michael shared rooms, and he told Michael, because he stutters a little bit. He don't do this when he sings, but when he talks, he stutters a little. Mm-hmm. Michael, I got a girl coming over, so when she come here, I want you to hide. So, so I guess the girl knocks on the door. Okay, Michael, hi, Mike hides under the bed.
Oh. Right.
So the young lady walks in the room, and Jermaine's enjoying her, and all of a sudden she goes, "Wait a minute, I feel a third hand."
Thank you very much, Tito Jackson.
Please tell Jermaine he's welcome here anytime.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Questlove Supreme Boss Bill Junebug, Sugar Steve, Isla Ia, shout out to Fonticolo and Unpaid Bill. Thank you very much, Mr. Jackson.
Thank you.
We didn't ask one question. Why did you never get the curl?
Why I never get who?
Why did you never get the curl?
The curl?
In the hair.
I don't want that.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. This is Questlove Supreme. We will see you on the next go around. Check out later. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.